A Brighter Star Than You, written by Ellis Moore as well, and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars prequel trilogy fic, rated for general audiences. Summary. Did you know Qui-Gon had a sister? Once a cycle, the Jedi Temple opens its doors to all corners, and so she goes, hoping to catch a glimpse of her baby brother. She cried for days when they came for him, even though their mother did not, even though he did not. Just 2 cycles old and already a solemn, serene boy, Qui-Gon Jinn simply wrapped his small arms around her neck, told her not to worry for him, and waved goodbye. The taller of the 2 Jedi, dark-skinned and imposing, picked him up and ruffled his hair, turning away. "Your brother is wise," the small one said. "Good care of him, the Jedi will take. Great things he will do." She knows they are forbidden attachments, though not why. And she knows, too, that he is too young to remember her once his new life has truly begun. She will not interfere, not tempt him away. She only wants to see him, to know that he is well. Every cycle, she takes the public shuttles to the temple, rising before dawn to make the long journey. It takes 3 transfers and a week's pay. Every cycle, she climbs the stairs to the temple doors and follows the crowd inside, gasping at the beauty of the place, drinking in the peace humming from its walls. There is no guarantee she'll see him. This is not a visitation ritual. It's a day for the children of Coruscant. They come with flowers and small tokens, sweets and savories, awe intent on their faces, their parents indulgently in tow. The Jedi greet them in an indoor arboretum, telling stories and performing small miracles with the Force to entertain. Once, she saw a cotillion made entirely of fallen leaves, dancing intricate patterns, though there was no wind. She thinks of it often. It takes 8 cycles before she catches a glimpse of him, sitting at the base of one of the magnificent trees and surrounded by enraptured toddlers. He's so tall now, all knees and elbows, but his face is still round with youth. The baby she knew is there in his smile. 2 cycles later, he's there again and his hair has been shorn to a close crop. A braid hangs behind one ear, and a tall, sharp-featured man stands near, his hands tucked into voluminous sleeves, while her brother tells a story with animated gestures and funny faces. 6 cycles later, she's almost given up, ready to turn away and make for home. Her second baby, secure in the sling on her chest, is fussy and she is tired after the long trip. But the crowd parts briefly, and there he is, under that same tree, watching the younglings, smiling to himself. The cycles slide by like water. He grows impossibly tall and broad of chest. A beard grows in. Small, spiky-haired students arrive at his side. His hair grows ever longer, but the smile is unchanging. They make eye contact once, and she tries to send everything of her life to him across the look, so he knows she is well, even though their mother is gone, even though her husband broke his leg and their first grandchild is struggling in school. Surely, if the Force is so strong with him, a little of it runs in her as well. Surely here, in the center of the temple, she can call on that to share with her own brother, to know the man he has become. His look grows quizzical, brows knitting, but his student tugs his sleeve and he turns away. The crowd closes in around her. The hour is late. She has to go. She's seen 3 of his students now, but likes this new one best, despite his badly cut hair. Perhaps because of it. The unruly fuzz lends an air of charisma, and the odd little ponytail suggests a rebellious streak, a strong sense of self. Like her brother was, he is comprised solely of long limbs and an eager smile. For a few cycles, they are there together under the tree. Its limbs now touch the transparasteel dome high above. Qui-Gon tells stories and the boy floats stones, cracking jokes to make the children laugh. Her youngest has a boy now, just about the age her brother was when he left. He is the fourth grandchild and not to be the last, named for their father, who is gone now too. The last time she climbs the temple stairs, her hair is more white than brown, and she knows the moment her feet touch the marble. One of the juggling stones has landed in her chest and sunk down to her belly, settling there with a cold and final thud. Still, she hopes. He's been gone before. But the student, now a man in his own right, sits by the tree without him. His braid is gone, his own beard sprouting. And there is a small, blonde boy at his elbow, watching the children play with a tiny, serious face. Hope is the thing that turns the wheels of the galaxy. He must have a new student. They are away on a distant world, helping. She hears the rapping of a cane on marble, even above the happy din of the place, and it echoes through her heart. The stone sinks even deeper. "Defeat a great evil your brother did," comes a voice. She looks down and sees the small Jedi from so long ago. He is timeless, despite all that has come and gone. He was old when the skyline of Coruscant was new, and he will grow older still. But Qui-Gon will not. She has not wept for him since the day he left, but tears begin to slip. He's gone. He is gone. There will never be a cheerful reunion. He will not know his nieces and nephew. He is gone, and all she has is a memory of chubby arms around her neck and eyes much wiser than their years. The Jedi hums, low and soft as her tears fall. They strike the temple floor like thunder. Can no one else hear them? Can he? When he speaks again, a pulse of solace comes with it. She feels it move into her and through her, easing the aches of a lifetime. This is what he knew, what he lived with every day. And she begins to understand. Mourn him, you do. But know him, you did not. The cane pokes her gently on the shin, pointing across the way. His apprentice, that is. Grieving, like you. Talk to Obi-Wan, you should. The end.